live from Chicago, the political capital of America. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by commentator Dan Proft, lawyer Patrick Cotter, talk show host Jim Bohannon, Kurt Smith from the University of Rochester. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And obviously, we have a lot to talk about in the next 2 hours, talking about the historic election this past week of Barack Obama, the president-elect, the junior senator from Illinois, and we'll be talking about it for the full 2 hours this evening. And again, I want to set a new ground rule on the program for this evening. The election is over. We do not want to refight the election. So please, if you have stories about William Ayers, you want to talk about tax cuts, you want to talk about all these things, please save it for Bill Cunningham, okay? We're not talking about it tonight. But I do want to know from our guests this evening what they think was the message. What was the message that was sent? Let's hear from our Democrat. Patrick Cotter, congratulations. You got a big smile on your face. Yep. You were out there at the rally the other night. What message was sent by the voters, in your view?
I think what the voters were saying was that they really do want something dramatic. They want a dramatic change, not just a change, a dramatic change, and a different direction. And they, if anything, I think what they saw in Obama was something that they knew would be very, very different from the last 8 years. And with McCain, they just weren't sure.
Republican Dan Proft, commentator for WLS Radio. What do you think they were saying, Dan?
I think it was a rejection of George Bush, a rejection of the Republican Party label and what had been wrought for the country under largely Republican leadership, both at the presidential level and six of Bush's 8 years at the congressional level.
So it was more of a personal rejection than a rejection of the Republican Party per se.
I think it's hard to extricate the two. I mean, I think Bush was the standard bearer of the party, and I think it was a rejection of his presidency.
From Westwood One, talk show host Jim Bohannon, the announcer on the Radio Hall of Fame broadcast, Hall of Famer yourself. Nice to have you back with the show.
Good to be here.
What were the voters saying, Jim?
I would agree with Dan completely. Anybody but Bush, anyone who's ever been near Bush, who's ever shaken hands with Bush, who has been photographed with Bush. Yeah, this was a very strong personal rejection. And once he's gone, I think the Republican brand will begin to untarnish.
Speaking of the Republican brand, let's talk with Kurt Smith, University of Rochester professor. Once upon a time, you were a speechwriter for President George Herbert Walker Bush. Your reaction to what the voters were saying, and would you define it as a mandate for Barack Obama?
No. First of all, this Bush shows that the acorn can fall a universe from the tree. It did and has. Bush, for 8 years, has shown a reverse Midas touch. Literally everything he touches, he destroys. You can look globally, you can look domestically, you can look ideologically, you can look politically. And I think what this was is the middle class telling the Republican Party, which purports to, after all, stand for and embody the middle class, don't you ever do this to us again. I think the most devastating polling fact, there are actually two of them. 20% of conservatives voted for Barack Obama. That was a therapeutic bloodbath. Don't do this to us again. He got between also 30 and 35% of evangelicals. This is a dagger at the heart of the Republican Party. Now Bush, with nothing left else to destroy, goes back to Texas, and hopefully the Republican Party can find out once again what it is and what it means.
Now, that to me means, Patrick, that it was more about the Republicans screwing up than Barack Obama really capturing the heart and soul of the American people. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. I think it's a mistake to see this as it's all about Bush. I think that everything you said was correct, but it ignores all those other groups that made their voices known this time.
I thought you'd
young,
agree.
The young, the African-American vote, the enormous shift in the Hispanic vote. I think there was a huge shift in the voters. Yes, there was a lot of people just rejecting Bush, but I think it's a mistake to see this as anybody but Bush.
The young, well, it was the young. The young turned out in the same percentage they did 4 years ago. It was 122 million people turned out. It's 4% up from 2004, and 2004 was 6% up from 2000. There wasn't this historic 130 million plus electorate that was predicted by some. So it was absolutely not about that. It was really about what was said. It was a rejection of Bush, especially when you see one in five conservatives vote against Bush. I mean, that is a clear rejection, and it was about suburbanites in Columbus and Charlotte and places like that who voted against the administration for the reasons that were articulated.
What about the issue, like 66% of the Hispanic vote going for Barack Obama, where George Bush did relatively well?
He barely got 40%. Richard Nixon got 42%. Ronald Reagan got 42%. And they did so without, incidentally, telling an entire race of people, please be our guest, break the law, because we're afraid of your political identity and your political power, and we want cheap labor.
How does the Republican Party make up for that?
By talking as they should have, talking about social issues, talking about church and faith and family. This is what appeals to Hispanics. That was the reason that Republicans thought in the first place they would be Republican.
If
you look at polling data where Obama made increases, tangentially among blacks and Hispanics and the young, but among the dominant 75% of the white electorate, he chopped off and he chipped away at Obama's, at McCain's margins. McCain ran far worse than Bush did or Nixon did or Reagan did. In fact, he ran the worst among whites anyone since Bob Dole in 1996. One of the
Obama
amazing parallels.
61% of the white vote. Dan.
A lot of what was said is true, but the exception of the Latino voters, I think Republicans need to recognize something, that the Sensenbrenner and Tancredo type rhetoric really did push Latino voters in a way away from the party in a way that's problematic in swing states like Nevada and New Mexico and Colorado, states that Bush won, states that you could argue put Bush over the top in 2004.
Yeah, but Dan, given how Bush framed the issue, what choice did the Republican Party have? Bush 41 wants said to me, rather ironically, if you don't have respect for law, why even have a president? Good reason and good answer. Fine question, because his own son did not respect the law.
We're now looking at a segment of the population, if this is true, which doesn't have respect for the law, in which case we've got a lot bigger problems than what we're talking about.
Well, Bush refused
to... In this particular case, and again, I'm not talking about you, but I'm talking about all of... Let's talk about talk radio for a moment. Mm-hmm. Because of the strong association that talk radio has with immigration and the immigration issue, do they bear some culpability of driving the Republican Party into a corner when it comes to reaching out to Hispanics, the fastest growing demographic group in the country?
No, we vastly overrate our influence. We every 4 years run out in front of a parade and yell, "Follow me!" The parade was already there, and it wasn't talk radio that did this.
The parade was already there for what?
Well, the parade was already there in this case, I think, going the other way. There are just a lot of people who really don't care who comes to this country, something that they'll get to judge over the next 4 to 8 years because everybody's coming.
That's not what you hear if you listen to talk radio.
Talk radio didn't have that much impact. Talk radio stood there and yelled, "Don't let this happen." And the public, even those who tuned in apparently, I'm not going to vote that way.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Take America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border. Was there a mandate in your view? What was the message sent by the voters last Tuesday? 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, coming to you tonight from Chicago.
Tom Castor here, VP of Banquet Foods. Recently, we launched new Banquet Select Recipes frozen meals. At only about $1.50, they've been going fast. Then came the letters. Meg B. says, "I made your pot roast meal for my husband. He loved the tender chunks of meat and rich gravy. But when I told him it was only about $1.50, he got into the fetal position and kept saying, 'It's not possible.' Please do something before he's committed." Duly noted, Meg, and thanks for the letter. New Banquet Select Recipes. So good for so little.
In 15 minutes, you could spend a fortune at the gas pump. You could make yourself sick on beef jerky. You could probably adopt way too many cats. Or, in 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance by switching to GEICO. There are plenty of ways to save. Discounts for being a good driver, multi-car discounts. You could save 15% or more. But if you enjoy spending your 15 minutes with way too many cats, by all means, who am I to judge?
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
From Sacramento, California to Syracuse, New York, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Patrick Cotter, the Democrat, you got a comment?
Yeah, I think it's telling somewhat that we've spent the first few minutes here talking about everything except the economy, when I think clearly the economy is what the election was all about. And I think it should be said, and I think I need to say it since I mentioned the Hispanic vote. I think Hispanics, African-Americans, young people, and by the way, their activity was more important perhaps than the number of votes. But all the groups that voted for Obama, I think they're single overriding issue was the economy. And that kind of swamps this notion of talking about immigration and cultural issues and family values, however one defines that. So I think that's what it's all about.
Would you also add to that list that maybe it makes sort of the anti-Bush argument that some of the, that our Republicans were saying early on, that maybe that isn't necessarily germane as well?
I do. I think, you know, I mean, I'm surprising you by saying I wasn't the greatest fan of President Bush, but I will defend him in this sense. I mean, the economic meltdown was not entirely his fault, and I think anybody there would have taken the blame. And I don't know that if he had been good on immigration, but the economy was still in the hole it is today, that it would have been, come out differently.
Jim Bohannon, question to you. Had there not been this Wall Street crash, would John McCain possibly have won?
Probably would have won. That made a tremendous difference. He came out of the Republican. We still don't know exactly what impact the Sarah Palin factor would have been at that point. But don't forget, he robbed Obama of all the convention bounce coming out of Denver when they had the two conventions back to back, and was leading in the polls. Then the markets went sour, and then he irretrievably fell to defeat, but not certainly by an overwhelming margin. Yes, the economy was everything.
But it wasn't just the Wall Street crash. It was the way that two candidates responded to that. And one seemed to be somewhat cool about it, and the other one had a different opinion every day of the week. from the foundation, the fundamentals are sound, to let's fire Chris Cox, to no, I don't like the bailout, to yes, I'm going to suspend my campaign, to yes, I'll support the bailout.
Still.
That happened in 7 days.
It did.
Is that the 7 days that ended this campaign, in your view?
I think that was the beginning of the end. I mean, I think it was going to go that way when the economy went the way it did, regardless of the outcome was kind of written. But I think McCain certainly exacerbated that with...
Showed no leadership.
Well, he showed no cogency of message, right? I mean, it wasn't like Obama came out with some stunning prescription for how this is fixed. He just sat there and let McCain destroy himself by, as you said, taking a different position.
Leadership by silence.
McCain showed a lot of leadership in several different directions.
He became what he accused Mitt Romney of being, the candidate of change, a new change every day. The very day that Lehman Brothers dissolved, Gallup issued a poll, McCain up by 4. I agree with you. I think absent the meltdown, of course, it was the McCain meltdown which exacerbated the Wall Street. I do believe McCain would have won. But why didn't Republicans and the average American rally to McCain or Bush? There's a frame of reference, and that is being seen as a big business administration. When Wall Street was pitted against Main Street in the meltdown, the result was preordained because this has been, in the view of a lot of Republicans, including me, the biggest big business administration in American history.
The other word that we've not mentioned in this in the discussion thus far, which I think is part of the overall feeling of either embarrassment if you are a Republican, disgust if you're an independent or a Democrat, and that is the issue of competence. Once upon a time, the Republicans owned competence as their issues. They were the managers. They were the grown-ups. And in this particular case, John McCain, albeit 72, didn't act like a grown-up. And the other issue is when you look at the mismanagement of the war, coupled with the mismanagement of Katrina, that to me may be a generational stain on the Republican Party. And they have not recovered from it. And again, I wanted to just put that on the record because I think that's part of the overall problem.
Part of the other overall problem is the hypocrisy. Is that the Republicans ran have always run as a small government, limited government, government restrained type party. And when you have the first new entitlement in 40 years, Medicare Part D, when you have No Child Left Behind, when you have the $700 billion bailout, when you have a pork laden energy bill that does nothing to move us towards energy independence, all being promulgated and forced down the country's throats by Bush and a Republican Congress, then you have a disconnect between what you're saying and what you're doing as a party.
Patrick.
Yeah, I to pick up on the competency issue, I think your point about the Republicans being the last 8 years the party of big business, I think they could have actually run on that if they had been competent big business. I mean, if big business was humming and the economy was going, I think they could have sold that. I think they've sold it before. But I do agree. I think incompetence is a huge part of this. And, you say Obama didn't have a grand plan to fix the economy. Thank God. I think one of the problems are guys who see a big problem and right away they have certainty as to how they're going to fix it. I think Obama, if nothing else, showed some smarts by being smart enough to shut up and wait and see.
Plus, don't have the power to change the economy. If they did, we would never have a recession.
Right. Folks, we got to go to calls. Yeah. Al in Hinsdale, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship WLS. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I voted for Obama because of the theme of change, you know, regarding everything, foreign policy, economy. But I'm already disappointed because he campaigned on change, but he's getting advice from the past deregulators, Rubin and Larry Sumners, who were the leading people who, they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated investment banks from regular banks. They pushed through legislation which got deregulation on these hundreds of trillions of dollars of derivatives, and that's why the economy crashed. So I just hope that he doesn't pick one of them as a Treasury Secretary, and I hope he picks people like Reich or whatever his name is.
Robert Reich.
Robert Reich. People who are thinking more about Main Street than Wall Street. And
let's let Jim Bohannon respond.
Alan, the last thing you have to worry about is that the Obama administration will not regulate enough.
Well, I think that people don't know too much about the derivatives trade. I personally feel that it should be shut down because it's just gambling. It's like if I take out insurance on my house, and then wouldn't it be gambling if 100 people take out insurance and saying that?
Okay, you know, Al, you've made your point. We're going to move on. You got your quarter's worth. Ron in Sacramento, California, listening to us on KTKZ. That's Salem Radio for Sacramento. Go ahead.
Hi. I think that the election disproved the so-called Bradley effect. I think the in Iowa, where it's like 95%, you know, Anglo-Americans, white people, they deserve all the credit in the world, and Obama, who is half white himself and half black, would never, ever have gotten elected without, you know, the voters of Iowa and New Hampshire, and while the Africans were still neutral and hadn't decided on which candidate. But I think the whole thing is a repudiation of Bush and McCain and the unnecessary, totally unnecessary warmongering and occupation of smallish countries that can't defend themselves.
Listen, thanks for your call, your response.
You know, it's interesting. Conservatives and I think most Americans want to move beyond race. Too many liberals are obsessed by race. You saw this enormously in the media coverage this year, the New York Times, the Post, MSNBC, to mention just three. I do think that the Bradley effect, while not an invention, was certainly harped upon ad nauseum by the press, with no evidence of any kind in any polling this year. I do think it was a repudiation, as we've talked of Bush. Two figures that I think particularly show the fiscal side. He was domestically, percentage-wise, the biggest big spender since and including Lyndon Johnson. The second point is this. In his first 6 years, George W. Bush became the first president since Thomas Jefferson not to veto a bill. One bill, not even by accident. So there was no emphasis. In fact, I think that there was a contempt for fiscal sanity day one of this administration, and the price was paid this week.
But on the issue of race, the issue of race was far more discussed in the primary by the Hillary Clinton campaign in the wake of the Jeremiah Wright story. Far more discussed, and the reaction of those primary voters, about the last seven primary voters, where it was, how did the whites vote? How did the blacks vote? That was really a mindset. That was a story about the Democratic primary. It was not, with the exception of the last 48 hours of the campaign, when this 527 started to come out and play the Jeremiah Wright story and Sean Hannity showing it every 12 seconds. I mean, there really wasn't much done about that issue. John McCain, as a campaign, as a candidate, was hands off to that.
You're right. No, I would. I wouldn't. I would say this. I agree with you that race. I think everybody wants to get beyond race. I mean, with the exception of a few nut jobs on the edge of both parties, I don't think we need to really deal with. And I applaud McCain for affirmatively making the decision not to go down that road in an overt way. I think what's interesting about it is how there was so little talk about race until the minute the election was called. And then for the next 48 hours, that's all everybody talked about is how is it, we're all knocking ourselves silly, patting ourselves on the back because we as Americans voted for an African-American for president. And it's great, but I think we ought to get over that and realize that this election was about a lot of other things. And I think most Americans, when they went in that booth, that wasn't the number one concern in their head, one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with that. I don't think it was a concern at all. I think, not that racism is dead in America, but it certainly should be put well on the back burner, this race and gender identity politics that mostly the left likes to play, considering what has come to pass.
We have to pause 1-800-723-8029, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border. Got a great discussion going on. Look forward to more of your calls when we roll on from Chicago.
Believe me, I'm a guy who likes to get his money's worth. That's why I'm gaga over Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. I get my money's worth because Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes gives me relief that lasts. Why does it last so long? because it stays in your eyes, that's why. The soothing moisturizers in Clear Eyes for dry eyes are specially formulated to stay put. For lasting relief, get Clear Eyes for dry eyes, the no drip drops. Use as directed.
Experience the personalized comfort of a Sleep Number bed during our Veterans Day sale. Save $500 on Queen or King Special Edition bed sets. That's only $13.99 for a queen set while supplies last. Or receive free bedding accessories plus interest-free financing until 2010 with approved credit on all other beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you. Sale ends November 11th. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts.
From Kern County in California to Mahoning County in Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Joining us this evening, our Democrat is Patrick Cotter. He is an attorney. Once upon a time, he was an assistant United States attorney in Manhattan and was on
Brooklyn.
Was on the prosecution team that got John Gotti, took him off the streets. Also joining us this evening, he's now a defense attorney. Also with us this evening is Dan Proft. Dan Proft is a political commentator for Don Wade and the Roma, in the mornings here on our flagship station, WLS Radio in Chicago. Jim Bohannon is here. He is the Westwood One Talk radio host, member of the Radio Hall of Fame, and all-around good guy in radio, who was in town to be the announcer on last night's Radio Hall of Fame broadcast. Kurt Smith also joins us. He's from the University of Rochester. He's a professor of English, and once upon a time, he was a speechwriter for President George Herbert Walker Bush. He's also a talk show host on Sirius Radio, XM Radio, where you do a show from the Baseball Hall of Fame,
yes,
because you are one of the country's leading experts on the history of sports broadcasting.
Well, it's a small field.
Well, we thank you all for joining us. And by the way, as I mentioned on our television broadcast the other night, as a lifelong White Sox fan, I'm delighted that we finally have a White Sox fan in the White House. Let us go to Joe, listening to us in Schaumburg on WLS Radio. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Bruce. Hi, panel.
Hello.
Hi.
The Obama victory also spilled over to the congressional races. For example, in North Carolina, where, as a Democrat, I'm glad Elizabeth Dole lost. She was a real good senator. And the other races that's still out there, though, panel, what do you think is going to happen? For example, Alaska, what's going on with that one? Minnesota, and also the runoff in Georgia, who, in my opinion, I think Saxby Chambliss should be beaten because of the vicious poison that he spewed against a true American patriot.
No, but that was 6 years ago. The statute of limitation has run out on that race. He's got a whole new race. Let's let Dan Proft respond
to your comment. The interesting thing about the Obama effect spilling over, I think it was actually the opposite. It was the Bush effect spilling over to these congressional races, because McCain, with a few exceptions like Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana, McCain ran well ahead of a lot of these U.S. senators that ended up losing, like Elizabeth Dole in North Carolina. So actually McCain was beating the generic Republican ballot and beating the Republican performance, a lot of these other target races and Republican congressional office holders who ended up losing.
And Al Franken still got he's still behind.
He's still behind a couple hundred. And Ted Stevens looks like he's going to win. He's going to hold on. So Palin will have an appointment.
But Chambliss has got a December 2nd runoff, I guess. Right.
But in Minnesota, aren't they already committed to a recount?
They're in the process of.
Yeah, by law. They have to.
And there will be a runoff in Georgia between Jim Martin and Saxby Chambliss.
That's correct.
Which was a surprise. That is one of the three that we mentioned. That's a surprise that's going to a runoff. But again, in the race coming up, the edge might be Chambliss because of fundraising.
He's at 49.9, and Georgia really has become, over the last 20 years, one of the most Republican, dependably Republican, large states now with 15 electoral votes. Can I just make a point here? But we talked about the economy, we've talked about immigration and social issues. I think the cleavage is not necessarily between right and left within the Republican Party, but rather between the big guy and the little guy. Mike Huckabee, a year ago, talked about how the Republican Party was ignoring economic angst and the anxiety, this enormous disparity growing between the upper class and the middle class, or we would talk about it between Wall Street and Main Street. And I think this really came home to roost during the economic meltdown. The reason that people didn't trust Bush and McCain, why would they? This is an administration that has not dealt with golden parachuting or outsourcing or cheap labor. When push came to shove, every time, it, in essence, sided with Wall Street. It had no credibility then when what happened 6 weeks ago happened.
Let's go to calls in Algonquin, Illinois. Wayne is on WLS and Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
Hello, Bruce. Good show.
Thank you.
Bruce, I see
good
that.
Good election.
Yeah.
Hey, I thought so. Was.
Go ahead.
I see this as a three-part mandate. Number one is to help get us out of this financial mess. Number two is to get us out of Iraq. And number three is to get us energy independent. But I have something that I think President Obama can do right away that would please me and maybe many others. That's to allow the photographing of the flag-draped coffins of the dead U.S. soldiers being brought back to this country. For too long, we've acted like we're ashamed of these soldiers who sacrificed their life for our country. In Europe, I understand they're allowed to photograph the dead soldiers. Why can't they do that here? And he could do that immediately, don't you think?
Patrick?
Well, with all due respect, I don't think he can do it immediately. He's not president. He doesn't have the authority to do anything right now. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. In fairness, I do think that there are some reasonable arguments as to why the military might not want those bodies photographed. I think it could be done in a respectful way, though. And I tend to agree with you that it's something that should be done after he becomes president.
Like Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan before him, is Barack Obama likely to usher in a period of transformation and any era of realignment, in your view?
Emphatically, no. Absolutely not. For one thing, he's got an awful lot of problems, and he's going to face a serious challenge in 2012.
More so than Roosevelt and Reagan?
Of course, Roosevelt in 1936, he may have been facing large problems, but he didn't face a credible challenge. Reagan, things were going pretty well, actually, when the second term rolled around.
But was it a transformative period?
No. I mean, put it this way. Will there be a period of Democratic dominance? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, we'll see. Don't forget Lyndon Johnson. The Republican Party was dead in 64, except it won in 68 and won in a landslide in 72. I don't think you can rule out the Democrats, or the Republicans, rather, in 12. Certainly not in 16, no.
We simply don't know. I mean, this year, I think, was de-alignment. We don't know about
realignment. That's why
realignment.
I invited you all here, because I thought you all looked
at me. We want the answer.
Oh, that's the rationale.
This is a perfect storm for the Democrats, and until you have a level playing field, you can't say there's been a realignment.
Yeah. No, my only point, getting back to some of these demographics, when you're talking about the young vote, and again, it wasn't as massive as you thought, but again, when you had such a huge turnout of African Americans and also Hispanics, the Republicans can't continue to
win
by just
getting
white guys
to vote for them. Bruce, if Republicans continue to address Americans as special interests, that's Democratic turf. As long as you try to buy this group, that group, Ronald Reagan talked about a shared community of values. Richard Nixon did as well. Each won 49 states by talking about faith and the place of religion in public life and patriotism and the work ethic and a contempt for elites. That's how Republicans win. That was true then. It's true today.
I think one of the telltale signs to answer your question will be how fast and far Obama and the Democratic Congress try and reach left. Do they? I mean, Ted Kennedy's already talking about nationalized health care. Charlie Rangel's already looking for the room that Henry Paulson took all the money from because he wants more money to do whatever he wants to do. So to the extent that there's a huge lurch left with more social engineering coming from the presidency, I think is the extent that Republicans can get back in the game as soon as 2010. To the extent that Obama pursues a more center-left agenda right from Jump Street, I think it's going to be harder for Republicans to get back.
Let me disagree with you there. I think you're assuming that all of these changes, if they pursue them, and I'm not sure the Obama people are going to go that far left that fast, they may listen to the pundits who are telling them, hey, it's a center country, stick center, everybody mellow out now. But if they do try national health care, if they do these other things, if they succeed, you will see the transformation. If they fail, you're right.
No.
Then everything's back on the table in 12. If they succeed, I think there could be a generational shift because if the people believe, and when I say succeed,
see,
I mean
by implementing or succeeding,
no,
which they implement
by,
and it works.
It works, exactly. The model was Roosevelt. To the extent that what Roosevelt did worked and was accepted by the people to the place that now we believe Social Security and Medicare, et cetera, are entitlements and we're supposed to have them, then you will see a major shift in the history of the country. Well, if they fail, you guys are right. You're back in 4 years, and you run on our record just like we just ran on yours.
Everything is predicated on the economy, and you talked earlier about Obama not having a game plan. Neither did Franklin Roosevelt. He talked about himself being the juggler, and he was, both in Albany as governor and then in D.C.
Well, let's face it was Tojo who ended the Great Depression by bombing Pearl Harbor.
Well, I think some people would disagree with you on that, but I take your point. I mean, certainly the war ended it like that because we needed everybody right away. I'm not sure that you can say, but for the war, the Great Depression would have gone into the 40s.
What does the appointment of Illinois Congressman Rahm Emanuel to be the chief of staff, what does that say about the new administration in your view?
You mean Wall Street fat cat Rahm Emanuel, right? this is a guy who, after he left the Clinton administration, made north of $10 million in a few short years being a rainmaker for an investment banking firm in Chicago. So, you know, already the rhetoric is running into the reality. And the other reality about anybody who knows anything about Rahm Emanuel is the word bipartisan is not in his vocabulary. So in terms of what signals does that send right out of the gate, that sends a signal that this is going to be a tenacious, bitter, very partisan, cutthroat administration, frankly.
Jim, what's your reaction?
I would agree with Dan. Yeah, this is the only way you could possibly call this a move toward the center is that politically, Emanuel hasn't been quite as far left as, well, for example, Barack Obama and Joe Biden, to name a couple. But no, he's a hardcore partisan. And he's going to act that way. And I think that it signals, whether it's right or not, it signals that the Democrats are going to try to push through a lot in the first 2 years because 2010, you never know.
Kurt Smith.
Well, to quote my former boss, no one will call this a kinder, gentler gesture. But I do think if you look at this, there's no question but that what we talked about in terms of media bias, can you imagine, let's say, if a President Huckabee or a President Romney had appointed someone of this ilk, of a conservative bent, they would be saying that it makes Bob Haldeman look like Shirley Temple.
But White House Chief of Staff Tom DeLay.
That's a good analogy.
Rahm Emanuel is partisan, there's no doubt about it. But he is not an ideologue. He is not an ideologue.
Agreed.
He is a pragmatist from the get-go. Mm-hmm. I want to get your reaction when we come back as well. 1-800-723-8029. Also, when we come back, talking about media bias. Did it exist? Back shortly.
Most weekends, going to the mall could help you change your wardrobe or home for the better. But this weekend, it could change your whole life. Because this weekend, you can experience a major breakthrough in sleep technology. The Sleep Number Bed, an innovative revolution in comfort that can offer no less than a wonderful night's sleep for an individual or a couple, simply because you control your total comfort. Everyone can discover their sleep number at a select comfort store. It's fast, fun, and free. Visit us this weekend to discover your sleep number on our newest, most advanced sleep systems with temperature control materials. What can happen when you find that number? Well, among other things, a better night's sleep. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts. Now through November 11th, save $500 on selected special edition bed sets. Queen sets only $13.99 while supplies last. Or get interest-free financing until 2010 with approval on all beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you.
From Lynchburg, Virginia to Seattle, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029 on America's great radio stations and also XM Satellite Radio, POTUS 08 every Sunday night. And I want to talk about media bias in this particular campaign. It was a charge that was raised, I think, more often than any recent campaign, maybe with the exception, although it's not very recent, way back in 1964. I remember that. Most do not. Kurt Smith, you certainly might remember that as well. But my question to you is, how bad was the media bias? Because I know you think it was bad.
Well, when you suggest and ask, did media bias exist, I assume you're being rhetorical. Charles Krauthammer, among many, said it best. He said the mainstream media and the Obama campaign were one and the same. That's not simply his view, although it is. The Pew poll asked Americans last week, who did most journalists want to win? By 70-9, they said Obama. 51-5, people said that the media tried to hurt, not help, Sarah Palin. In terms of positive, negative coverage, Barack Obama, 73% positive coverage. Sarah Palin, 64% negative. John McCain, 57% negative. If you talk to national journalists, Tom DeFrank's a very good example. Washington bureau chief of the New York Daily News, former Newsweek correspondent at Newsweek, a longtime friend of mine. And he was talking on my show several weeks ago about the widely held view that the media was in the tank. He didn't suggest that it was. That would be improper for him. But he said, look, it's a very legitimate issue. And I think that one that the media ignores at its peril, because without credibility, and how could credibility exist after this campaign, how can we trust, how can we believe?
We Jim did Bohannon. See some of it, and it it angered me, but I think part of the problem has also been the willingness on the part of the media to mingle their op-ed and their front pages, and nobody was more egregious in that regard than NBC, which would regularly send their real journalists over to sit down with Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann, and there should have been a Berlin Wall drawn between those two. So part of it is appearance, but part of it is reality, too.
I think the embarrassment, I think, to everyone was MSNBC, specifically the coverage of the conventions.
Yes.
They learned a little bit and took a big slap on the wrist. And they did not make their change in getting Olbermann and Chris Matthews off the anchor desk. They didn't do it to appease conservative critics. They did it to appease the members of the journalistic community, many of them who were left of center, that just said, wait a minute, I can't believe what we're watching.
Well, the funny thing was, yeah. I mean, Deborah Howell, who's the ombudsman, easy word to say, for the Washington Post, had a piece today that went through all the coverage and basically conceded the point that it was overwhelmingly negative to McCain relative to positive coverage for Obama. She's no right winger complaining about media bias. She just went story by story. You look at AP headlines over the 90 days. It's obvious. But here's the problem for Republicans. The media is always in the tank for the left. They always have been in the tank for the left. So we cannot use that as an excuse for why McCain was unable to present a contrast message, was unable to present a coherent message that he stayed with and his own vision for where he would take the country relative to Obama. The media is always in the tank for the left. Republicans know that going in.
Can I disagree? Let me disagree.
To paraphrase somebody on Comedy Central whose name escapes me at the moment, I think sometimes reality has a liberal bias, and I think this election is a good example of that. I think, to simply say, well, there were more negative stories about Sarah Palin than about, Joe Biden, it totally ignores reality, which is to say, if somebody is doing a lot of stupid, silly things—
Like Joe Biden?
If I can finish, doing a lot of stupid, silly things, and you report that, there's going to be more negative about you. It's like in sports. It's like a player who's playing really badly complaining about the press because they keep writing these stories about how badly he's playing.
Well, that's
it. And, if I may finish, I love it when I hear people like Charles Krauthammer, who's is syndicated in I don't know how many newspapers or the Wall Street Journal or Fox News, which apparently nobody seems to think is an embarrassment, even though they're in the tank for the right. But that's okay because we all know they're in the tank for the right. But MSNBC, that's terrible. MSNBC is terrible because they're in the tank for the left. I just think it's silly. I think it's silly. I think it's scapegoating. It's looking for excuses. And I think your point is correct. The party that won the last two elections, supposedly overcoming this horrible liberal bias, when they lose now, the media killed us.
The one thing, however, I think in this particular, I generally believe that the media is left and that the media is biased. I agree with you. They're in the tank for anything that is left of center. But in this campaign, and I think they were way, way over the line, as I said, with MSNBC. But in this particular campaign, the big moments, John McCain had 4.5 hours to himself with Barack Obama, with nobody out there that was going to be between him and a camera and a message when he was in the three debates. And he blew it. He couldn't explain virtually anything in those campaigns other than introducing Joe the Plumber. And it was Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin, I've heard interviews. You heard me tell about it. If you get Sarah Palin talking about oil exploration and energy-related issues, she's as smart or smarter than any politician out there. That's her issue. She's no dummy. But you know what? It was Sarah Palin who went on with Charlie Gibson. It was Sarah Palin who went on with Katie Couric. And frankly, she blew it.
Look,
it was a self-inflicted wound. It was either bad staff work, bad preparation. And you can, all the stories that have come out of that, obviously the left wing loves to, when somebody slips and looks bad, they like to make them look worse. But in this particular case, you cannot say that McCain, and I believe Palin herself, had plenty of opportunity to clean up their mess, especially McCain.
I'm not scapegoating, and this is not either or. I'm not going to absolve the McCain campaign. It was a fiasco. The day that Sarah Palin was announced, I said on NPR, she was an absurd choice, grossly unqualified. I mean, how much more condemnatory can you be than that? But the national press, Fox, the Wall Street Journal editorial page, thank you very much. How about CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, NBC, ABC, PBS, NPR, would you like to continue? The domination, the near monopoly in terms of Obama versus McCain. And incidentally, this favoritism began long before John McCain even became the front runner for the Republican nomination.
We've got to say farewell to Kurt Smith, just for this hour, Kurt Smith and Dan Proft and Jim Bohannon and Patrick Cotter will all be back for another full hour. And in the next hour, we're going to be talking about the gay rights marriage issue in California. Why did it go down to big defeat? I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly.
Today, let's talk about the good things, about where you can find them. Like when you go into a store and you want the best, what do? You ask the clerk what he's got in the back. And if he likes you, he says he'll be right back. Shoes, cigars, even the butcher. The best stuff is always in the back. So, when it comes to getting what's best for your Buick, Pontiac, or GMC, head to your participating dealer right now and drive around back. Down their Good Wrench service lane for Good Wrench and Go Time. For a limited time, you can get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. With fuel prices the way they are, taking proper care of your vehicle can help you spend less time pumping and more time driving.
I can't stop thinking about it.
So, between now and November 30th, give it a go and make it Good Wrench and Go at your participating Buick, Pontiac, or GMC dealer. One way to know if Good Wrench and Go is right for you, visit GoodWrench.com and click on your GM brand.
Hey, want to know the naked truth? New Pepperidge Farm Baked Naturals Toasted Wheat Crisps are made with the bare essentials, like select whole grains and ground blue corn. And there are no preservatives, so they're natural. You might even say they're undressed. So the taste is uncluttered, unsurpassed, and undeniably Pepperidge Farm. New Baked Naturals Toasted Wheat Crisps. It's the naked truth about snacking.
I'm here to tell you that Geico.com is easy to use. I bet you already knew that. A website that's convenient and fast. Well, really, had no idea. Of course it's fast and easy. Now, allow me to go off script and tell you why Geico.com is so great. First, you can get a free rate quote right then and there. You can update your policy, make a payment, even report and track a claim. There's the news. There's the big aha. Sorry, just had to get it off my chest.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Experience the personalized comfort of a Sleep Number bed during our Veterans Day sale. Save $500 on Queen or King Special Edition bed sets. That's only $13.99 for a queen set, while supplies last. Or receive free bedding accessories, plus interest-free financing until 2010 with approved credit on all other beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you. Sale ends November 11th. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Dan Proft, Patrick Cotter, talk show host Jim Bohannon, Kurt Smith from the University of Rochester, and Joe Matthews of the New American Foundation. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8029. That's 1-800-723-8029. 7238289. Continuing our discussion this evening about the recent election. And one of the big stories that was emerging out of the state of California, everyone knew that it was going to be a foregone conclusion that Barack Obama was going to win the Golden State by large numbers, which happened. But it also looked like there was going to be a measure, a Prop 8 is what it was called, which was dealing with the issue of gay marriage in the state of California. Recently, the Supreme Court in that state approved gay marriage, so it went to the ballot. It was called Prop 8. And the last time we had our guest on the program, he is Joe Matthews, who is the Irvine Senior Fellow of the New American Foundation and a contributing editor of the Los Angeles Times. Joe, welcome. But you may recall when we last spoke several months ago that you thought that Prop 8 was sailing to victory. What happened?
Well, it won, actually. And I think your confusion, I need to clear up right off the bat. Prop 8 is a ban on same-sex marriage in the state constitution. Several months back, polling showed that that the no on 8 side, which is the side in favor of same-sex marriage, appeared to be winning and was in pretty good shape. But that campaign really never showed up. They made a couple of ads that were actually very confusing, I think added to some of that confusion about what was the yes side and what was the no side. They were very sort of positive and about equality, which is a bad idea when you're on the no side of an initiative campaign. It was a very poorly constructed campaign. The ads that were the arguments for same-sex marriage against the ban that were strongest didn't seem to make it into ads until very late in the process. About 3.5 weeks before the election, they had to sort of replace their team of consultants. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, firing your manager in the middle of a pennant race. It's something I don't think I've seen, actually, in the last few years of California Initiative history, and they seem to have really seized a defeat for their side from the jaws of victory. On the other side, the Yes on 8, the pro-ban folks, had a very effective campaign that made the issue not about same-sex marriage, which is still, you know, more popular than not in California, but about the implications of the court decision that legalized it back in the spring. Would this create problems for churches? Would same-sex marriage have to be taught to young children in public school? The yes side, which again is the side in favor of banning same-sex marriage, really convinced made the issue about that, and the no campaign was pretty impotent, didn't do a good job of responding.
Joe, how did the two major political parties react to Prop 8, including the governor?
The governor was no on Prop 8, so he was on the side that lost, the side in favor of same-sex marriage. But he didn't much get involved. He didn't really campaign for it. I mean, the state has such profound budget problems. That seems to have taken some of a good bit of his time. The governor's priority amongst initiatives was a redistricting reform measure, a measure to take ability to draw legislative districts out of the hands of the legislature. He was supporting that. It appears to have won. It has a lead of about more than 100,000 votes, but we have more than 2 million votes in the state outstanding, not counted. So he didn't make this a big priority. He did say this weekend, actually today, that he hoped that the California Supreme Court would overturn Prop 8, would overturn this new ban. This is clearly going to courts, but he stayed out of it. Most of the Republicans, however, supported Yes on 8. The only other sort of really prominent dissident on that side was a former congressman named Tom Campbell, who is currently in the polls the leading contender to be for the Republican gubernatorial nomination in 2010.
Now, you mentioned the Supreme Court. I mean, the Supreme Court in California has had a history of striking down props that are successful at the polls, do they not?
They've had not a terrific one. It may surprise people to know, but the Supreme Court has been considered, and this Supreme Court in particular, probably the most conservative institution of government in California. 6 of the 7 justices were appointed by Republican governors, And I think what was so striking about the court decision, 4-3 back in May to legalize same-sex marriage, is that it came from such a court that gave it real power. They have been willing to reverse parts of measures, and they've often kept things off the ballot because of procedural or other difficulties often beforehand, but not in this case. I think, you know, it's a really close call. It was a 4-3 decision, so all it takes is one justice to change their minds. But it seems
one of the things that, at least in some of the coverage that I've read, is that it was the large turnout in the African American community and in the Hispanic community, large turnouts brought upon by their support of Barack Obama. It was their support of the ban that was really the death knell to Prop 8.
It looks that way. You know, that's based on exit polls, which don't seem to have had a great record of telling us things at any level at which they're taken. And there's still a lot of ballots still out there. But it certainly, in polling leading up to the race, in pre-election polling, strong African-American support. I mean, African-Americans supported this, you know, almost 60-40. That supported 8, which, again, is the ban. And that was obviously greater than the state as a whole. There appears to have been about a 5-point result in the end, about 52.5 to 47.5.
Also, what role? I mean, what role did the religious right play? And primarily, based on what I've read of your reporting on this, the Mormon Church was maybe more aggressive than any other church battling this.
They were. There seems to have been a real effort in the Mormon Church to make this an issue. They've actually the Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints has been very aggressive on supporting one man, one woman marriage for many years now. The allegation on the other side is that they're actually the Mormons, who have obviously very problematic relationships with other evangelicals, have been trying to use the issue to improve those relationships. And in this case, there was there was directives from the church leadership in Utah, and also some travel from church leaders in Utah into California to really strongly encourage members to give both of their money and their time. And by some estimates, I mean, we don't break out political donations by religion, maybe even close to half of the more than $30 million to the Yes on 8 campaign came from Mormons.
Joe, we've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. I know our guests here in the city of Chicago, they've got a question for you when we continue. 1-800-723-8029. We're talking to Joe Matthews of the New America Foundation, and we will continue with your calls when we roll on from Chicago.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
Hey, want to know the naked truth? New Pepperidge Farm Baked Naturals Toasted Wheat Crisps are made with the bare essentials, like select whole grains and ground blue corn, and there are no preservatives, so they're natural. You might even say they're undressed. So the taste is uncluttered, unsurpassed, and undeniably Pepperidge Farm. New Baked Naturals Toasted Wheat Crisps. It's the naked truth about snacking.
From Knoxville, Tennessee to Bakersfield, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Joe Matthews is on the phone. We've got guests in the studio as well, and I want to give them an opportunity to get into our conversation. Dan Proft, you had a question about how the money was being spent.
Well, I just understood that $70 million was spent on the campaign, and I didn't know how that broke in terms of the for and against.
It basically half and half. It was even. At the end, each side was raising almost $1 million a day. I think the yes side spent its money much better. There's much more plan. They got more bang for the buck. They, you know, they booked TV ad time much earlier, and thus paid less for it. The No on A campaign, which was sort of just very poorly organized, largely dominated by, you know, sort of activist and advocacy groups, gay rights groups, until the very end when sort of the cavalry of true political pros, a big bunch of them, showed up and made things a little bit better. You know, they spent more for stuff and spent it late, and, you know, we're becoming slowly but surely a vote-by-mail state here.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time the cavalry arrived, the election was already well underway. And
Kurt,
the polling we have shows that the yes side was particularly strong in early voting.
Joe, I want to. Kurt Smith is with us. He's from the University of Rochester, former speechwriter to George Herbert Walker Bush. He's got a question about the Hispanic and the African American vote and their role not only in this campaign, but how it might translate to bigger, broader issues in the future.
Well, it's interesting. Republicans can't gain minority votes, it seems to me, by economic issues because they're too closely linked to Wall Street and bad history. Social and cultural issues we see here can be, I think, a bridge between the Republican Party, particularly to Hispanics. But my question is the larger issue of gay marriage, because in several other states, gay marriage lost on Election Day. If gay marriage can't win in California, exactly where can it win?
I think it can win in California. This was a giant setback because so many things favored the cause of gay marriage, which was the no side. First, being on the no side of any ballot initiative, as the gay marriage supporters were, is an advantage. You had this court decision, which was, you know, fairly popular, but you had a really, campaigns matter. This is a great example of it. You had a really bungled campaign, a lot of bad messaging. It's unfortunately sort of, for folks who believe in same-sex marriage, been followed by these sort of scattershot protests about this campaign that is over, rather than what any kind, and, you know,
so when this,
really target
Joe,
religious institutions in a way that's really problematic. I think
so,
that,
Joe,
I think
am
that
I hearing leave. Am I hearing you correctly that in this particular case, it was a matter of some really serious mistakes in strategy and going out of their way to pick a fight and make it a religious issue was really the death knell to this issue? They had it won and they totally screwed it up.
That's basically my view. I'm not sure the folks on the No on 8 side would agree with me, but I think they blew it. They, you know, they dropped the touchdown pass in the end zone, essentially uncovered, is what happened here. I suspect once folks calm down, there'll be some more strategic thinking. We'll see another ballot measure in 2 years, in 2010, when we have statewide elections. And I strongly suspect you'll see a different result. However, there's a great danger here, and I think that the question is there is a potential for this to become a deeper, more persistent wedge issue that lasts for a generation. And these folks, you know, supporters of same-sex marriage all over California, and you're starting to see in other parts, who are marching and having protests in front of churches, big churches, Catholic churches, evangelical churches, Mormon churches, today on Sunday morning, are actually doing real damage to their cause. It's really a moment, if they're thinking more strategically, to lower the temperature. I keep waiting them, expecting they'll do that, but they're not.
Well, there was also, at the Radio Hall of Fame event this year, there was a huge protest because of the induction of James Dobson through a voting process into the Radio Hall of Fame, and there was several hundred people, you know, protesting that event, which I certainly was well aware of. And to what extent, by the way, there are many of those that believe that Dobson was sort of was the big kingmaker out there. What role did James Dobson and Focus on the Family play in the ban out there?
They were part of the coalition on the yes side, but I mean, and obviously important, but not the biggest part. I think a lot of the energy came from the Mormon Church, from a number of big, mostly evangelical congregations, largely in the San Diego area. That's where the momentum for this first came from. And this was a big group, and it had truly organic support, and it had a real ground effort. The no side did not. Another total failure of the no side on this.
Jim Bohannon of Westwood One, radio talk show host, has a question for you, Joe.
Yeah, Joe, it's no secret that there is a streak of social conservatism among black and Hispanic voters.
Yeah.
Certainly no secret that there was going to be a larger turnout because of the Obama presence on the ticket. Was there, therefore, any concerted effort to aim advertising at those communities along the lines of, hey, I know it goes against the grain, but you know what discrimination feels like, this sort of thing? Was there any effort to particularly persuade those parts of the electorate?
No. The answer is no. They just dropped the ball on that, too. The ads consisted of white folks and white faces almost exclusively, and very hard to understand ads, very indirect. An ad with a bride being tripped up on her way to the altar with a guy, two sort of old white folks talking about, what they wanted in terms of rights for their daughter. But it really was not a campaign that courted or crossed over. And part of the day on the 2 days before the election in the headquarters in San Francisco on this issue, and it was not San Francisco is a diverse city, but on a racial basis, it was not a diverse group of folks amongst the volunteers in the campaign headquarters. It felt like something they didn't really do their homework. They made a better effort late, when they brought in political pros, but it was just. Groundwork was not laid. The yes side raised questions, some of them fair, some of them unfair, about the larger implications of this, and the no side, the supporters of same-sex marriage, never really answered them.
Let's go to Mike in Spokane, Washington, listening to us on KXLY. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Bruce, for taking my call. I don't think Catholics or Baptists or Mormons should be discouraged from participating in the political process. Just the other side participates. Those of religious faith have every yes. right to voice their opinion and their actions. And to me, Proposition 8 would have opened a Pandora's box if it would have passed, because they would have been legal actions against churches, against schools, never-ending legal battles.
Kurt Smith is shaking his head as you speak.
The caller is exactly right. George Gallup calls this the planet's most religious developed nation. America is extraordinarily religious, particularly that block called Middle America. And to suggest that every liberal group should have carte blanche to become involved in democracy, but that it's somehow a bestial for Mormons to become involved is preposterous.
I want to get Patrick's response, and then back to you.
I'm not sure. Maybe I dozed off, but I don't think I heard anybody say that it was bestial that the Mormons were involved. They were simply pointing out that they were. And I don't think anybody's suggesting, and I don't think they should, that the religiosity of this country, which we all recognize, is somehow purely the province of conservatives. I think there's plenty of liberals who consider themselves, and I think validly, to be religious. And I think that this is an unnecessary type of wedge to try and drive between religious people. There are religious traditions which don't approve of gay marriage. There are religious traditions which find no problem with it. They see marriage in this sense, under the proposition, as I understand it, as a state action, and not necessarily religious at all, one way or the other. So I think it's no one has suggested it's wrong that the Mormons were involved, but I think it would be silly to ignore the fact that they were.
Yes, they were. There were many signs, in fact, at the Hall of Fame outside criticizing the Mormon Church for becoming involved in this.
Yeah. I'd like to get in and clarify on 2 points. I think one, we never saw, and there's no evidence tonight as I look at the law that legal same-sex marriage, which we had for the last 6 months, by the way, in this state, has been any threat to religious or religious affiliated institutions. I think it might have been wise for same-sex supporters to pass legislation that made that beyond crystal clear. But on the other side, same-sex marriage supporters, folks on the left, really went hard after individual Mormons for expressing themselves. This
What's
way
good?
That I think is a problematic for a campaign for marriage equality, where you're talking about anti-discrimination.
Joe, I've got two quick questions. We've only got a couple of minutes left. what to those 16,000 who got married in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, what happens to them? What's likely to happen to them?
We don't know. It's quite clear that those marriages are going to be subject to legal challenge. When legal experts we talk to debate whether that those marriages will remain valid or not. It's a very clear proposition. You know, only marriage between man and woman is valid and recognized in
but
California.
But civil unions are still the law of the land in California, right?
We do have a domestic partnership law. The problem for many of these folks is that when they got married, many of them dissolved their domestic partnerships. So avoiding of their just an outright voiding of their marriages would leave them with nothing at the moment.
Bring on the lawyers. One last question. Where was Barack Obama on this issue in California?
He said he was against same-sex marriage, but no on eight, which actually was the exact same position the governor took. He said he personally opposed same-sex marriage, but he encouraged people to vote for the no on eight side. You know, don't write discrimination into the Constitution.
Okay, on that note, we're going to have to say farewell. Joe, thanks very much. That's Joe Matthew, who is Irvine Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation and a contributing editor of the Los Angeles Times. Kurt Smith, we thank you very much from the University of Rochester. I know you've got to catch a plane, and we thank you very much for joining us tonight and sharing your thoughts. Got another whole half hour, 1-800-723-8029. More calls when we roll on from Chicago.
Experience the personalized comfort of a Sleep Number bed during our Veterans Day sale. Save $500 on Queen or King Special Edition bed sets. That's only $13.99 for a queen set while supplies last. Or receive free bedding accessories plus interest-free financing until 2010 with approved credit on all other beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you. Sale ends November 11th. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts.
This is Tom Castor, VP of Banquet Foods. Recently, we launched new Banquet Select recipes. At only about $1.50, they've been hard to keep in freezers. Then came the letters. This one from Jane M. My husband really enjoyed your enchiladas and red sauce, chicken and beef, wow. But when I told him the price, he went into shock. I actually had to slap him. Sure, I enjoyed it, but maybe there should be a disclaimer. Well, think about it, Jane, and thanks for the letter. New Banquet Select recipes, so good for so little.
Bruce Schumann back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our Democrat is Patrick Cotter. He's a happy man. He is an attorney and once upon a time worked out of the Brooklyn office of the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York, where he was an assistant U.S. attorney and helped send John Gotti, noted crime don, to prison. Also joining us this evening is Dan Proft. He is a political commentator on Don, Wade, and Roma's broadcast on our flagship station, WLS Radio, and was talking to the folks in England, Great Britain, on election night.
I did. I was the Republican pinata for the BBC on election night.
I actually pitched on you.
Yes.
Also with us this evening, a frequent role that he plays. Jim Bohannon is here, also one of the country's leading talk show hosts. He was in town for the Radio Hall of Fame broadcast, and he's also an inductee into the Radio Hall of Fame. Hails from Missouri. Missouri or Missouri?
Well, I say Missouri, but others have disagreements about that.
So. Still pretty close to call, but it looks like, yeah. I guess it's going to go into the McCain camp, which is, I think, only the second time in the last 48 years that Missouri is
longer than
on
that.
The,
for the entire 20th century.
20th century.
Missouri voted only once, 1956, for Stevenson for the loser. So it does interrupt a string.
That's probably one of the states where Sarah Palin probably helped him in. With that win?
To a great extent, although Missouri is a microcosm, St. Louis, Kansas City, big metro areas, but in between that, a lot of rural area, yes.
We talked earlier in the broadcast about whether or not there's really a mandate. And the next story we're going to be hearing, obviously, is what is the transition? Who does he put on his team? Talking about the president-elect. And then, of course, there's going to be the big story of, you know, the first 100 days. As a Democrat, Patrick, and you were for Obama early.
I was.
What do you want him to do in the first 100 days? What are you looking from your hero?
Well, I actually am in, I think, the minority of the Democratic Party right now, because I would like to see bold action. The overwhelming voice I'm hearing in the party is that he has to take it slow and pragmatic and realize it's basically a center country and try to rule from the center. I think that's wrong. I think he has to take advantage of the opportunities he's been given. I think the first thing he has to do is fulfill his promise, which is to immediately seek a middle-class tax cut. He's promised that over and over again. I think he has to keep his word. I think he has to immediately get an important stimulus package through, unless the lame duck Congress can get one through. But I would like to see him immediately begin to move forward on issues like health care. I think I'd like to see him immediately begin to implement the Iraq policy that he promised. I think he needs to keep his word. I think he needs to do it boldly and bravely.
Dan Proft, from a political standpoint, which of those do you think he will tackle first, and does tackling any one of those in any particular order give an opening to the Republicans to maybe extend this campaign a little bit and make his honeymoon very short?
Well, if he does what was suggested and he embarks on a bold action in terms of further socializing healthcare in this country, removing tracks from Iraq in a reckless way where he doesn't have general support, in particular generals like Petraeus, then I think he gives the Republicans an opening. If he leads with things that are going to be relatively popular, like middle-class tax cut and some of the other ideas that and things that probably will be less controversial, even though they should be maybe more controversial, like another $700 billion or trillion-dollar stimulus package, a kind of a 21st century WPA, as some Democrats are talking about, then I think he's can kind of rightly claim that he is going to govern from the center and allay some of the fears that both Republicans and, frankly, some Democrats have that he is going to veer sharp left with Pelosi and Reid riding shotgun for him. So I think he's got a real choice to make. And, frankly, I'm not 100% in terms of where I think he's going to go. I think there's a lot of pressure coming from both directions on him.
Jim Bohannon.
He wants a second term, certainly, and that's not going to be easy for any president given the problems we face right now. Whereas at the congressional level, you have people who are, for the most part, are pretty safe, especially in the House, where gerrymandered districts give a lot of Democrats pretty safe seats. They can go off the deep end to the left and still retain their position in Congress. So, ironically enough, and maybe it's not ironic, I don't know, maybe Patrick's right, but ironically enough, I think there's a distinct possibility that Barack Obama may be the principal break on the Reid-Pelosi juggernaut to the left.
And he will be the counterbalance.
He, simply by saying, look, I'd like to win re-election in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, you know, about, he can learn the lesson of Clinton in 92, right? When Clinton won, he veers left. He starts with things that are very controversial, very divisive, like gays in the military. And he gets and then Republicans take control of the House because of it and for the first time in 40 years in 94. Then after that, then he moves back to the center, and it's welfare reform, and it's a capital gains tax cut. So it'll be interesting to see if he learned the lesson from Clinton or he did not.
I'm gonna predict... and I've said this, I know I was talking to Dan Rivers of WKBN in Youngstown, both on the air and off the air when I did the show from Youngstown a couple of weeks ago. And that is that I think that he's going to govern from the center. I think, first and foremost, I think he's much more of a pragmatist than a strong ideologue. And we talked earlier in the broadcast about Rahm Emanuel being his chief of staff. Rahm Emanuel was there in the White House when Congress was lost. So I think a lesson has been learned by the guy who's going to be blowing in his ear virtually every day as his chief of staff. And I think what's going to happen is I think he may look for a fight with not necessarily maybe fight's the wrong word, but he's going to look for some issue where he can say, I'm going to go one way and Harry Reid and Speaker Pelosi will go the other way. But I think he also has to be politically realistic in that he won the Democratic primary because of his opposition to the war in Iraq. And it seems to me that if you're against the war in Iraq, you are not going to put up with any more excuses from the Democrats, because they elected a Democratic Congress and the war goes on. They will not sit by and say, we're going to have a Democratic president, Democratic Senate, Democratic House, and the war goes on. I don't think that they're going to be patient very long. You're shaking your heads.
I agree completely, and I think the same can be said about health care. I think to the Democratic electorate, excuse me, I think health care is huge, and I think that Barack, because he's pragmatic, and I agree with you, he is. He's a lawyer. The first thing you have to know about Barack Obama
smart
is that
lawyer.
He's a smart, good lawyer. He's pragmatic. He's about what can be done. If he's going to deliver on health care, I think he's got to do it early when he's popular, when he's got everybody behind him, when the wind's at his back, before any big controversies come up. I think if he waits too long, he won't be able to do it, and I think he's smart enough to know that.
He's smart and pragmatic, but keep in mind one thing. Intelligence and pragmatism can only carry you so far. He's going to try to keep happy both an awful lot of people who are in the middle of the electorate who just wanted some kind of change because they're unhappy with the economy, and an awful lot of far-left activists who were central to his getting nominated in the first place, especially early on in Iowa and New Hampshire. I don't care how smart and pragmatic you are. At some point, he's going to have to either do A or B, and he's going to lose some of those.
Well, that's true. And here's the other thing, Bruce. You may end up being right, but there's no track record in Barack Obama's history of doing that. In other words, showing that leadership, showing that independence. He has always been, regardless of the milieu he found himself in, whether it be the state Senate in Illinois or the U.S. Senate, or even rhetorically running for presidency, he's always been a go-along, get-along guy with kind of whoever the group was in power at the time, from the Chicago machine to the president.
I think that is more of how a pragmatist would act. I mean, you know, they talked about the 145 present votes when he was in the state Senate.
Right.
That's because he was a politician, and there are many. They don't want to offend anybody. They vote present.
Well, I understand.
They don't want to offend anybody.
Right.
Now, again, as John McCain said in one of the debates, you can't just keep voting present. You've got a lead right now. But what I'm saying is that gut-wise with his heart, I believe that he will be more of a centrist, and I don't think he's going to go out and go in one direction. I agree with you, Patrick. I think health care and middle-class tax cuts is going to be where he's going to go first. He's not going to make the mistake of Clinton and basically on his first press conference open up Pandora's box about gays in the military. That destroyed that administration for the first 2.5 years.
But if he doesn't get the troops out of Iraq, and if he doesn't pass a health care program, he will have a challenger on the left in 2012.
But it's not just about his gut. It's also about his spine and standing up to all of these varied interests, including the leadership in Congress that he's going to have to deal with, because they, as you've already seen, like I said, from Ted Kennedy and Charlie Rangel and Barney Frank on down the line, they are, you know, excited to do all the tinkering and social engineering that they've wanted to do for so many years.
Yeah, but let me make a very important point. the idea that Barack Obama has to go to Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid and ask permission to do anything right now.
Nobody said that.
No, but he doesn't. And they are not going to tell him what to do. He's going to tell them. He's going to say, I put this together. He is a very different guy than he was in the House when he was a guy who didn't have his own power base. This is a very powerful politician today.
No,
we all know six months from now that could all disappear.
No, but
that makes a difference in how you lead. You talk about leadership and you say, well, you know, in the past you didn't do it. Well, if you don't do something you can't do, I don't think it says anything about leadership. When you actually have the power, I think he's going to use it. He's going to use it in a smart way.
It also goes back, I think, to the comparisons to Roosevelt and Reagan. He's going to do what they did. He's going to go above them. He has the ability, because of his communication skills, he will go up and over them. And basically, I mean, no one's going to, you know, he's going to have no problem out-talking anybody that he wants to out-talk.
If
the people are with him.
If Nancy and Harry are smart, and if all the people were with
Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, we would be talking about a veto-proof U.S. Senate.
He didn't get that.
The Democrats didn't get that. Barack Obama's coattails weren't able to deliver that. And I think because there is a strain, I think the country is maybe center, maybe a little center right. And I think Barack Obama is smart enough to realize that. We've got a pause and we've got calls. I promise our callers, we're going to go to them when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont. 1-800-723-8029 on America's great radio stations, live every Sunday night and on XM Satellite Radio.
Today, let's talk about the good things, about where you can find them. Like when you go into a store and you want the best, what do? You ask the clerk what he's got in the back. And if he likes you, he says he'll be right back. Shoes, cigars, even the butcher. The best stuff is always in the back. So when it comes to getting what's best for your Buick, Pontiac, or GMC, head to your participating dealer right now and drive around back down their Good Wrench service lane for Good Wrench and Go Time. For a limited time, you can get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. And while you're there, have them check your tires. Should you need them, they can recommend the proper tires for your vehicle.
I can't stop thinking about it.
So, between now and November 30th, give it a go and make it Good Wrench and Go at your participating Buick, Pontiac, or GMC dealer. One way to know if Good Wrench and Go is right for you, visit GoodWrench.com and click on your GM brand.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Eduardo. He's been very patient, standing by, listening to us on our flagship, WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. 2 points real quick. Expect Iran to be attacked possibly before January 20th. And I don't know. I'm very pessimistic about Mr. Obama's economic policy, figuring that Mr. Emanuel has a conflict of interest with Freddie Mac.
What do you see as the conflict of interest?
Well, he had, meetings with people from Freddie Mac, and I mean, I don't know how he expects his economic policy to go forward when he has his chief of staff, doing behind his back.
Well, I think your point is that there's an association there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that Rahm Emanuel's been appointed chief of staff. He's not been appointed to Treasury. He's not going to be the voice on economics. Of course, he'll have a seat at the table discussing it. I would point out that the Freddie and Fannie situation has already been dealt with to a great degree by the current bailout. So I'm not sure that's really much of a real issue.
Yeah, but certainly restructuring or what Freddie and Fannie look like going forward is still an issue. And all the clowns that were in charge of Freddie and Fannie that Golden parachuted out before the plane crashed in the side of the mountain are Obama's economic advisors, not to mention he was the number two guy in the Senate in terms of contributions from Freddie and Fannie. So it's a legitimate issue to see if we're going to see the change we can believe in when it comes to Freddie and Fannie.
By the way, speaking of the Senate, we should mention that there will be a new U.S. senator from Illinois. The governor in Illinois will make that selection. The governor of Delaware is going to replace a replacement for Joe Biden. It could be his son, the attorney general. And also, it's very possible that the governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, will be making an appointment as well. And she could be making an appointment herself.
Although,
what do you think of that idea?
I think it's a smart play for her.
I do too.
If she has that opportunity,
give her all that national experience and international experience,
right.
And then what are the liberals going to say in 3 years?
Well,
they'll
still hate her, but
they'll have different reasons.
They'll say that she's too old.
It might be a good move if she wants to run for president. It's a terrible move if she wants to stay in the Senate. 8 governors in history have appointed themselves to the Senate, and 7 of them have lost their bid to be elected to a full term.
I may be wrong, though.
Was that one?
No, I don't, right offhand.
Oh, I was just going to say, I may be wrong on this, but I'm not sure, but I think that the talk in Alaska is that if Stevens wins and is forced out, that there would then be a special election as opposed to an appointment.
Yes.
So she may not have that option, but she certainly would have the option to run.
Right. Yeah.
And that would be very interesting to see.
Well,
so
she'd be pretty tough to beat up.
And as regards Iran, that's a really interesting question, whether or not the Israelis will decide, especially if it was true that Joe Biden really did tell the Israeli leadership, get used to a nuclear Iran, it's over, which, of course, he later denied vehemently. But if he really did, and the Israelis really believe that they've got from now till January 20th to attack Iran with the support of the U.S. administration, that raises very interesting questions. Mm.
So the president may not be as lame duck as everyone thinks. Let's go to Greg, listening to us on WNOX in Knoxville, Tennessee. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good evening. Bruce, this may be one of the best panels you've ever had on your show. I think the arguments are very cogent.
Thank you very much. We're going to have a lot more smart people because, you know what, this is the smartest audience in talk radio, and we've got to elevate the panel members. Host as well. Go ahead.
Before I get to my comment, I'd like to commend the book FDR's Folly, written by an economist that pretty much carves up the Franklin Roosevelt administration like a Thanksgiving turkey. The historians are still enamored with him. The economists are, like I said, are covering him up. It's a real good read. I'm amazed that we even won World War II, how much he took out of the American industrial sector through his taxation policy. But what I call about is what I'm worried about, you've already touched on. I think the Fannie-Freddie debacle is created by Barney Frank and Chris Dodd and Maxine Waters and other people that you can see in the YouTube video in 2003 testifying that, oh, Fannie and Freddie are fine, and then again in 2005, oh, Fannie and Freddie are fine, when the numbers I was reading in 2003 and 2005 suggested the sky was falling. In my opinion, these people have shown gross negligence, they're incompetent, And they may even border on treason, what they've done. And I think they should be indicted and tried. And I don't see that coming from an Obama administration.
Neither do I.
Well, no. But what you'll see is more of the same. I mean, the Obama, for as brilliant as Obama is purported to be by everyone, or at least everyone in the media, this is somebody who didn't learn the term moral hazard in economics 101 class, and that's what Franny and Freddie are. When you socialize risk and you privatize profit, you have the potential for Fannie and Freddie meltdowns, and he wants to do more of that.
Bonnie, go ahead. You got 1 minute. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You got a minute.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about the number of minorities who voted to support the gay marriage ban.
Yes.
And it seems to me to be a little bit hypocritical because these are people who have experienced discrimination firsthand. And so you would think that they would not want to put anybody else to that. And then also, when they did this support, they implied that they have a preference for traditional, you know, man and woman marriage and child raising. Yet demographically, they're out of wedlock birth scoring. Their own choices as a group say, you know, do as I say and not as you do.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much on that note. That's picking up on our discussion with Joe Matthews earlier in this hour. Our thanks this evening to our Democrat, Patrick Cotter. Again, congratulations. He's got a smile on his face. Let's see how long he keeps that smile on his face. Dan Proft is here. He's going to get a lot more airtime as the voice of the opposition, commentator for WLS Talk Radio, and Jim Bohannon, the veteran talk show host. And again, Radio Hall of Famer, always doing a terrific job. Nice to have you in Chicago for the Radio Hall of Fame. And again, it's always a delight for you to share these microphones as you invite me to share yours frequently on the Westwood One Radio Network. We thank you very much. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS News Talk Radio in Chicago. Our thanks to Patrick Johnson and Tom Vera-Cruz and Ben Stewart and Fritz Goldman and a whole cast of thousands. We thank you all for joining us this evening. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Most weekends, going to the mall could help you change your wardrobe or home for the better. But this weekend, it could change your whole life. Because this weekend, you can experience a major breakthrough in sleep technology. The Sleep Number Bed, an innovative revolution in comfort that can offer no less than a wonderful night's sleep for an individual or a couple, simply because you control your total comfort. Everyone can discover their sleep number at a select comfort store. It's fast, fun, and free. Visit us this weekend to discover your sleep number on our newest, most advanced sleep systems with temperature control materials. What can happen when you find that number? Well, among other things, a better night's sleep. Sleep Number by Select Comfort. It's the bed that counts. Now through November 11th, save $500 on selected special edition bed sets. Queen sets only $13.99 while supplies last. Or get interest-free financing until 2010 with approval on all beds. Go to sleepnumber.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-NUMBER for the store near you.
You know, I always appreciate it when someone goes the extra mile. And that's why I love those folks who make Clear Eyes eye drops. They put an extra moisturizing ingredient in every Clear Eyes product in the entire line, even their redness formula. An extra moisturizer they never even told us about. See, they're humble too. So if you want eye drops that do the job, and then some, get Clear Eyes. Use as directed.
I'm Errol Squires, inventor of Relieve One-Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment. I invented Relieve because I wanted a very effective, natural treatment for cold sores that worked really fast. Relieve works so well and so fast for me, my family, and friends, I wanted to help other people who suffer from cold sores. I think people are smart enough to know if something works. If you suffer from cold sores, try Relieve and find out if it works for you. Relieve is comprised of botanical extracts and is guaranteed. Buy Relieve now at all major stores.
In 15 minutes, you could spend a fortune at the gas pump. You could make yourself sick on beef jerky. You could probably adopt way too many cats. Or, in 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance by switching to GEICO. There are plenty of ways to save. Discounts for being a good driver, multi-car discounts. You could save 15% or more. But if you enjoy spending your 15 minutes with way too many cats, by all means, who am I to judge?
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hey, want to know the naked truth? New Pepperidge Farm Baked Naturals Toasted Wheat Crisps are made with the bare essentials, like select whole grains and ground blue corn, and there are no preservatives, so they're natural. You might even say they're undressed. So the taste is uncluttered, unsurpassed, and undeniably Pepperidge Farm. New Baked Naturals Toasted Wheat Crisps. It's the naked truth about snacking.